Hello again, ladies and gentlemen. Ghost Nobody here, ready to bring you Chapter 39 of Hunter Hunted Hybrid Wars, my third dip into the Clan Mason series. Always, if you can like, share and subscribe to this wherever you can, and leave feedback at sites like fanfiction.net, archiveofourown.org, or even at my own website, ghostnobody.com. All of your thoughts and feelings are always appreciated, and I always love reading what you guys have thought, and what you're thinking, and the directions you want me to go in. And if you do pop over to ghostnobody.com, why don't you check out Stormrider while you're there? My original story told on that one site and that one site only. And you know, if big girly dragon-esque girls, orcs, elves, magical realms, multiple worlds, and undead are your thing, check it out, I'm pretty sure you'll enjoy it. And also while you're there, why don't you check out the Ghostly Links section? Pick yourself up a copy of Mortis from either Smashwords or from Amazon. Help support me and keep me doing what I love. Bringing unlikely alien romance stories to you good people. So, without any further ado, let's get on with the show, shall we? Oh, but first the usual legal disclaimer. I don't own AVP or anything to do with it, this is all fan fiction. I'm just here to keep the Huntresses happy. Let's get on with the show. Chapter 39, Clan Hammer. Second Lieutenant Lisa Elliott was currently stood on the bridge explaining what had happened to her, to Zeepa. To the captain. From where he sat, comms officer Treven couldn't hear what was being said properly, but by the very animated body language, it spoke volumes to him. Zeepa had been shot down, and most likely killed, saving her. Suddenly his control panel began to bleep, seemed to be picking up something on the broad spectrum frequency, and it was on an open and unencrypted channel. He wondered if it was the humans broadcasting. Why would they be using an open channel like this? And the Grand Patriarch said that they were paranoid about stuff like that. Treven opened the frequency and tuned it in as best he could. There was a lot of static and interference, but Treven was a skilled SIGINT and comms officer. So with a bit of effort, he quickly and skillfully tuned in the message that seemed to have been locked onto a repeat. And that's when he heard words that froze his heart solid in his chest like a block of ice. Fuck! 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 He yelled, scrambling from his seat and running full pelt to a nearby panel on the wall, while everyone else watched him in pure shock. He slammed his hand against the reader on the panel. It scanned his palm print and bleeped green, causing the panel to slide up and reveal a keyhole that he jammed a long key that he'd been pulled from around his neck into, for turning it 90 degrees and priming the system. Comms officer First Class Treven Asmara, Darkstar, I say again, Darkstar, this is not a drill, he said, trying to keep his voice from shaking. Never in his life he imagined he'd be the one to ever say those sacred words. No sooner had those words left his lips than the whole ship went absolutely crazy. The oath had been called upon, and now it was time to deliver upon it. His fellow comms officers were immediately calling out into the depth of space on every available encrypted clan frequency, informing Home and every other clan member in range that the oath had been called in. Klaxons began going off all over the bridge and all over the ship, giving a very specific alarm call, a very specific call to arms, one that was reserved just for this occurrence and no other, so that its weight would never ever be lost among the noise. The captain marched right up to him. Report, comms officer Treven, he demanded in a voice so deep it almost sounded subsonic. Darkstar called from Second Lieutenant Zeepa Longclaw. She's alive and fighting for her life, he said, his voice wavering as he delivered the news. The captain nodded and turned briskly to march right up to his chair, pressing the internal comms button as he did. This is the captain. I want all seekers, hunters and battle angels assembled and in the hangar bay. Everyone else to battle stations. We have a dark scar and we're going to get our beloved sister back, no matter what. That is all, he said before dropping into his chair. Helmsman, plot a course. We're going in, he said. Sir, yes, sir, the helmsman, a rather tall Xeno flight officer, yelled, saluting before turning to his console and plotting a course to take the large, heavy battle cruiser straight into the asteroid field. Back on the Holmesville, the comms and intel centre was going crazy. The call had come in over the quantum comms relay, and the comms officer had deployed the Darkstar alarm immediately. The others have begun rooting support to the origin of it. Both CMN Fury and CMN Vengeance were already en route from the neighbouring systems to join the Clan's Pride. Now, granted, that's probably more than enough to deal with the threat, but that wasn't the point of the Dark Star. I want the Grand Matriarch's Fury battened down, ready to go, soon as myself and the Grand Matriarch are on board. Contact the Clan's Pride, inform them that we're coming. The Grand Patriarch yelled as he headed for the door with such fierce determination in his voice and his posture that no one else could help but feel pure pride in their hearts. This was what it meant to be Clan Mason. Call, and the Clan will come for you, no matter what. And everything about the man said he was just about to prove it before any measure of a shadow of a doubt. As Jack ran towards the shuttle hop-off near Yoshi and Citrus's hive, he was joined by other running seekers and hunters. But as he drew near to the hive, he saw two very obvious figures coming out of it and heading right for him. Is it true, Grand Patriarch? Is the Dark Star my Zeeper? Queen Citrus said, using her telepathic voice as Jack drew near. Jack nodded, never breaking his stride as he headed for the shuttles. Yes, she's been captured by hostile humans. Don't know the full extent of the details yet, he replied telepathically to cut through the noise. Then we are coming too. That's our beloved daughter and we are her parents. We will not leave her out there. Citrus snarled angrily, and Jack looked at them both. He could never see that he'd ever say that he'd ever seen the mild-mannered Japanese man that was King Yoshi looking so determined and fired up. So he simply nodded and pointed to the shuttles, before the large Xeno Queen and her human king fell right in step with him. Go, 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 line up, get ready, the Hunter Sergeant Major yelled with a voice so loud that her voice boomed off every surface in the hangar bay of the Clan Pride. And the team of hunters, seekers and battle angels scrambled to form up into ranks of six long by six deep. Well, all except for the seekers. On board, they only had a single team of four on board. Since the Clan was spread out quite thin, the Seekers were spread pretty thin as well. There were far fewer of them than there were any of the other sections of the Guardian Corps, so the result is they only had a single active Seeker team to each Clan Mason cruiser, less so on smaller vessels. But given what Seekers could do, that was more than enough. Received a confirmed Dark Star call from 2nd Lieutenant Zeepa Longclaw. Shot down and thought lost by human forces within this system. Turns out she's been captured and taken prisoner by those forces, but she managed to get out a single transmission to us, a Dark Star call. And we all know what that means. Our beloved sister fights for her life and is protecting innocence as she does. So we will attack them. We will retrieve our beloved sister and we will save all those she protects. Sergeant Major yelled so loudly that her passion reverberated around the room along with her voice. There was a loud cheer, and Ramal Rainbowscale pumped his small fist into the air and yelled out his fury and devotion to his new family, just like the 9-foot Yajuta female just to his right and the 6-foot human male to his left. His voice might be lost in the symphony, but it was as much part of it as any of theirs. This was his family now, and he was determined to fight for every one of them. They had given him his true place in the universe, and a purpose. And they hadn't coddled him simply because he was a male. They had lifted him up, made him strong. They had taught him how to fight, and always how to be the male he'd always dreamed of being. And now, it was time to pay that debt back. Captain, and the Fury and the Vengeance are on station, forming up on our flanks. Both captains report full battle readiness. The Seeker and Hunter and Battle Angel teams are at our disposal. They've also put their fighter wings under your command, as conceded fleet control to you as Zeeper is of ours, Treven said, glancing at the captain, who sat in his command chair with his large fingers making a steeple as he rested his arms on the armrests. He nodded his acknowledgement. Very good. Time to launch their fighters and have them RV with ours. Tie their systems into our sensors and use them to help us plot a course through the actual asteroids, he said, and Treven nodded, issuing the commands to both Fury and the Vengeance at the same time. Using the fighters as scouts, the three large cruisers picked their way through the asteroid field, recording the path they took so it could be transmitted to other en route CMN ships that were rushing to join them, including the Grand Matriarch's Fury, which had sent confirmation that it was underway to their location. The three large ships used their sea whiz and point defence guns to destroy any of the smaller asteroids that were unavoidable, but with the large turrets having to blow large ones out of the way, only once or twice, they moved in tight formation. Pretty soon the large ships were clear of the huge asteroid field and began to power into the system, where all three immediately picked up on the presence of an enemy ship that had been reported by Second Lieutenant Lisa Elliott upon her return. The three cruisers headed right for the planet and its defender with zero hesitation. Even without direct contact with the clan, the Darkstar Protocol gave the commanding officer on-scene the authority to act with the full support of the clan and to carry out whatever actions they deemed necessary to reach their personnel, fully including lethal force. This had been decreed by both the Grand Matriarch and Patriarch upon the founding of the Darkstar Protocol. They had wanted these words to be so sacred to each and every member of the clan that they would be ingrained into their psyche as both a warning and a promise. They said to use these words will pull the whole weight of the clan's might to you to defend or avenge you. So do not use them lightly, because in doing so you could cost a great many of your brothers and sisters' lives and put the whole clan at risk. It was meant so that these words would only be used in the most direst of circumstances. Both a warning and a promise all in one. One that every member of the clan both respected and feared. And that's why up until this day these words had never been uttered before. As the three ships moved towards the planet, the human ship began to move to put itself between them and the large red body. "Scan 'em," the captain said, and the weapons officer and science officer both carried out deep scans of the enemy ships. "Looks like a light cruiser of some kind. Looks like it's carrying nuclear weapons by the radioactive signatures I'm picking up. But as for regular weaponry, it's pretty minimal. They have no energy shielding to speak of. Do have rail guns, but nothing that our shield can't handle. They won't last more than a minute in a fight with us," the weapons officer said confidently. "My scans concur, Captain. By our standards, the technology's antiquated," the science officer said. "Captain, they're hailing us," Treven said, as he heard a distinctly human voice coming in through his headset. "Put them through," Captain said, and Treven transferred the voice to the main speakers of the bridge. "Unidentified ships, this is a USS MC Hammer. You're in restricted space. Turn around immediately or you will be fired upon," a rather angry-sounding human voice said. The captain growled deeply. "USS MC Hammer, this is the CMN Clan Pride. You have perpetuated an act of war upon Clan Mason by firing on one of our ships and taking one of our pilots prisoner. We demand her immediate release, and also the release of the prisoners we know you are keeping hostage on that planet's surface. Take a good look, Captain. You're severely outgunned. That toy you call a ship won't even last a minute in a shooting match with one of us, let alone all three. So we offer you this choice. Return our pilot and hand over the prisoners to us, and you'll be allowed to leave peaceably. Or stand in our way, and we'll show you exactly what Clan Mason does to those that hurts its people," the captain said with a deep snarl. He then turned to Treven to send this message of the vengeance and the fury, and told him to lock all weapons onto the human ship and prepare to fire. "Zipa is on the planet, and one way or another, we're going to get her back," he snarled, and Treven relayed the message. "Fuck!" Zipa yelled as she ducked behind a workbench with shots pinging off the metal surfaces above her head. She desperately looked for a way out. After she'd set the comm system to broadcast, she'd damaged the controls, effectively freezing them so they couldn't stop it from broadcasting. She then turned her attentions to trying to free her brethren from captivity. But it hadn't taken the humans long to discover what she'd done and to trigger a full base-wide lockdown alarm. Now they'd unleashed some kind of odd-looking synthetic humans out into the base to try and hunt her down, and these fucking things were relentless. They looked like humans, but then not like humans at the same time. It was odd. They had the same features and bodies, but their faces were so incredibly synthetic it was disturbing. China-white faces that didn't seem to have any real expression other than just neutral, despite their constant attempts to try and take her life from her. These faces were going to haunt her dreams for some time to come. That is, if she lived long enough to actually get to sleep another night. Suddenly she noticed a vent latch to her left against the wall, and with the speed only a true Xeno could muster, she turned and wrenched it from the wall before diving headfirst into the ventilation shaft. Thankfully, being a Xeno meant that despite her larger size, Zeepa could fit quite easily into tight spaces, and she was able to compress her body in on itself. But unfortunately, this vent went vertically straight down. So after diving in headfirst, she now found herself free-falling headfirst vertically down into the dark. "Whoa, shit!" Zeepa exclaimed, jamming both of her claws on her long dorsal spines into the metal in an attempt to slow her slide down the narrow shaft. And she just managed to stop herself about 2 feet off the base of the shaft. "Goddess above, that was a close one," Zeepa breathed as she wiggled herself down to the base of the shaft and began following it along. "Zeepa, I can feel you stronger. Are you close, young one?" The Queen's voice drifted into her head. And the Queen was right, her voice seemed louder to her now. "Not sure, I'm in the ventilation shafts. The humans set their bloody robots on me. Been chasing me non-stop since I sent the message out to the clan," Zeepa replied. "Trust your feelings, young one. Follow my voice. Come to me. If you can free me, I'll be able to help you," the Queen said. Zeepa tried to focus her mind. Still difficult with the fierce screaming in her heart and soul, but eventually she managed to get a bead on the sense of the Queen. It was odd, feeling like a really strong magnetic field was pulling her. So she followed it, crawling through the narrow metal tubes until she found another vent that would finally let her out. It took quite a few hits to get the grate to smash outwards, allowing her to crawl outwards and find herself in what appeared to be a pitch-black storage room of some kind, with some very large boxes and shelves in every direction. Zeepa moved slowly between the shelves, trying to keep a low profile, towards the door. All of her senses were on high alert as she made her way to the door. She was listening hard and focusing, trying to pick out any little sound that revealed the presence of the enemy nearby. That's when she heard a pair of footsteps and some voices drifting from inside the room beyond the door. "What the hell is going on?" a gruff-sounding female voice called from beyond the door. "We're being recalled to the hammer. USSMC is pulling out," another voice, this one male, said. "What? Why?" the female demanded. "Dunno. From what I've heard, we might have pissed off an alien species or something. Smith told me that 3 huge ships have shown up after we shot that fighter down. So my guess is the Corps doesn't want to start some kind of interstellar war with an alien race that can call on that kind of firepower. Plus, it's my guess that the commander doesn't really want the fact that he's been renting out the Marines to some fucking dodgy squints of Weyland-Yutani to become public knowledge. Because some people back home are really going to kick up a fucking stink about that. And the top brass are really going to take a dim view of that shit," the male said. "But we don't even know what the fucking hell is going on here. Aren't they just studying some alien animals or shit?" the woman said defensively. "Oh, come on, Marks, please tell me you're not that fucking stupid. I don't pretend to know exactly what these fucking squints are doing here, but those guys are not studying fuck all. They're making some kind of weapons of some fucking kind. I don't know what or why in the name of hell it'd be on this godforsaken dust bowl in the middle of nowhere," he said. "Seriously, do you think that's what those black things are? I mean, I've never got close enough to get a really good look at one of them, because the Weyland security guys are always around. And fuck me, those creepy-ass droid things keep us grunts away from those areas. But I've seen some creepy-ass things in those cages being taken through the base. And why the hell do they keep bringing prisoners here? Where do they go? Never see them again," Mark said. "No clue, and I don't want to know. But what I do know is I don't want to get my ass shot off by some pissed-off alien race. So come the fuck on before we miss our fucking shuttle and get our asses left behind," the man said, and the footsteps faded into the distance. Zeepa found herself smiling brightly. The clan. The clan were here, and they were coming for her. All she had to do was hide and keep out of sight, and the clan would get her out. But first she had to get to the Queen. Zeepa lightly pushed the door and poked her head out into the brightly lit corridor. Sounds of running footsteps were everywhere, but they didn't sound too close by. So Zipa decided it'd be worth taking a chance on, and she moved out into the corridor. She moved slowly, staying low to the floor and hugging the wall, trying to lower her profile just in case another of those Marines came round the corner. She was following her feelings and letting the magnetic draw pull her through the maze of narrow corridors, until finally she came to a door. What appeared to be had a hand scanner next to it. Fuck, I need a palm scan, Zipa said as her frustration hit her. Her mind began to whirl as she tried to figure a way to get into the room. That's when it hit her. She's a Xeno. Her blood is pure bioacid. Zipa looked at the wound on her tail and she hissed as she scratched at the scab on it, causing it to reopen and start bleeding again. She flicked her tail at the hand scanner, causing her thick green blood to spray onto it and immediately begin fizzing and smoking as it began dissolving the casing. The panel sparked and before long began shorting out. The lights on it shut down. But unfortunately it didn't open the door because it caused the door to lock down instead. Fuck! Zipa yelled in frustration, slamming her fist against the metal casing, causing it to ring like a solid dong. That's when a second idea hit her. If her blood could melt the panel, why wouldn't it just melt through the door? So Zipa began to rap her knuckles against the metal, listening for a change in the pitch. Soon as it changed, she pressed her wounded tail against the metal, which immediately started to smoke as her blood ate into it. Fortunately, she was not losing enough blood to be risky, but it wasn't exactly the most pleasant feeling, and it was making her feel slightly light-headed. But fortunately, her blood did its job and cut straight through the locking bars and deadbolts that held it shut, allowing her to dig her long claws into the hovel and use her impressive strength to pull the door open. Behind the door was some kind of control room, fitted with monitors and a variety of machines everywhere that were monitoring the cages contained her brethren. The room was totally empty. Looked like the scientists have already evacuated to whatever place the base deemed safe. Zipa noticed that one side of the room was made out of what appeared to be glass. She stepped up slowly and glanced through the glass. It appeared to overlook a large circular chamber, and a heavy chain running down from the ceiling attached to those chains was the Queen. That's when Zipa heard a soft bang from behind her and she spun around, reaching for the source among the computers. And that's when she spotted what appeared to be a small row of lockers that probably held clothing for the scientists. She slowly approached the first locker and Zipa leaned in and listened hard against the door. There were no sounds, so she moved to the next one and listened again. This time she heard the extremely fast thumping noise of a panicked heartbeat through the metal of the door. With a series of smooth, rapid motions, Zipa wrenched the door open, reached in and grabbed the terrified-looking human inside it, pulling him out and holding him up in the air in front of the scruff of his collar like she was holding a fire tiger cub. The male human was young, no more than 21 years old by her reckoning. He had pale white skin and short-cut brown hair on top of his head. His brown eyes seemed to have an odd outer circle that went wide as dinner plates behind a pair of glasses, they were pinched onto the end of his nose as he came face to face with a very large, angry Xeno girl who was holding him in the air. "Please don't kill me," the male squeaked in a heavily accented voice. The Zipa vaguely recognised as German. She'd encountered a few human members of the clan whose descendants had hailed from this region of Earth before migrating to the clan homeworld, and given that it always insisted on teaching their offspring their mother tongue, it always seemed to ensure that the accent remained as well. "Give me one good reason not to," Zipa snarled angrily, opening her mouth to snap her in and jaws in front of his face to make a point. "Holy shit, you really can talk," the male exclaimed in surprise, making his voice go even higher than before. "Of course I can talk. We're not fucking animals for you to run your vile experiments on, and we're certainly not your fucking weapons," Zipa screeched right in his face. I didn't do any of this. I just work here. I don't have a choice. The company has my family under surveillance because they don't want me to leave. I'm a biochemist, a pretty good one too. I signed up for the company's biochem program in college because they permitted me to pay my way through college and university. But when they realized I'm very good with molecular acids, they sent me here. They lied to me. The male almost screamed and Zipa cocked her head curiously. "Lied to you how?" she demanded. I was led to believe that I was coming here to study the effect of using molecular acids to separate minerals from ores, and to cheapen the extracting of minerals from ore-rich planets like this one, for the company's mining section. But as soon as I got here, I realised something was off, because the molecular acid they had to test me on materials was like nothing I'd ever seen. It seemed organic. So I started snooping and found out exactly what was really going on here. It sickened me that they were testing and experimenting on live alien creatures. I wanted to leave, but they wouldn't let me. Showed me pictures of my family, my mother, my sisters. Told me if I didn't shut my mouth and keep working, that they would all simply disappear. And then I would as well, Mail said, sounding very forlorn. Zipa wasn't detecting any form of deceit from him. His pheromonal scent was incredibly strong, and it was laden with fear. But when they're under stress, living humans release very obvious chemical markers. But these weren't simply there for him. So they forced you to experiment on mankind under threat of killing your own family if you didn't? Zipa asked in a softer voice, and the male nodded his head, causing his glasses to slide down his nose, making him reach up to push them back into place. But I didn't ever experiment directly on your kind. I only worked with the samples they brought me, the male said, and Zipa nodded. What's your name? She asked. Paul? Paul Ritter? The man said, and Zipa nodded again. All right, Paul Ritter. I'm going to offer you a chance at redemption and possibly a new life. But put it this way, if you deceive me in any way, you will regret it. And I promise you, it will come to light, Zipa said warningly. It's the truth, I swear it to you. I'll do anything, just please, don't kill me or hurt my family, he said in a pitiful sounding voice. Zipa snarled at the implication. No member of Clan Mason would ever hurt an innocent. We are the sworn guardians of the innocent the universe over. So if your heart is pure, then you will be offered a place among us. But you will have to prove yourself and earn it, Zipa said. How do I do that? He asked, and Zipa carried him over to the window and pointed to with her free hand. Help me to free her. Do that, and I swear to you, I'll plead your case before the clan. Because trust me when I say this, you're going to be meeting them very, very soon. Paul seemed torn, probably because he'd been told that the Chained Queen was the most dangerous thing on the planet. But eventually he nodded. I did not work in this section. I was confined to the labs. I got in here with a stolen keycard that I grabbed off one of the team leaders as they were panicked when the alarms went off. While they ran to the shelters, I ran here in the hope that I could find something to use to leverage to protect my family. But all right, I'll help you. From today, at least I'll do something good, he said, showing Zipa a red key card with a woman's face on it, making Zipa smile broadly. That's a spirit. Now come on, help me get to her. We have to get her out of there, Zipa said, taking the card from him. She placed him down on his unsteady feet, and then the pair began searching for a way to get into the Queen's chamber. Detecting multiple shuttle launches from the surface, they seem to be on an intercept course with a hammer, the weapons officer reported loudly. The captain growled loudly as he paced across the deck, back and forth. Any change in their stance? He asked, and the weapon officer shook her head. None, sir. They simply sat blocking our path to the planet. Fuck it, this is taking too long, said he, pressed his comms button on his armrest. This is Captain. Green light. I say again, green light. Go with the Goddess Guardians. Get our sister back, or carve a wound so fucking deep in their memories that they will never come within 1,000 light years of Clan Mason ever again, he said, and Travell instantly began relaying the instructions to both the Fury and the Vengeance. All right, people, you heard the man. Get your tails on the shuttles, we're fucking going in. All Seekers, launch. You're going in first, the Sergeant Major yelled. Ramal gave a thumbs up to the hangar bay launch coordinator as he checked his controls. They all showed green. He was sat in one of the pilot seats of the brand new ultra-high-speed fighters, aptly named a Seeker Shadow. These fighters were designed with the sole purpose of the Seekers in mind, as they were the only ones with the reflexes that made them capable of piloting them. They were completely unarmed, but were heavily shielded, and basically an ultra-high-speed missile with a pilot seat They were designed with incredible manoeuvrability and high speed as their sole focus. They were to get the Seekers where they needed to be incredibly quickly. They were even kind of shaped like a missile. This is Blue One, Seeker sound off. The voice of Zatam, the leader of his team as the fighters lined up on the launch, said. She was the huge 9-foot-tall Yajuta female who had been stood next to him in the hangar bay, and her voice sounded like gravel across his sensitive ears. Blue Two on station, a voice that Ramal recognised as Michael Lee, the human that also stood next to him. Blue Three on station, Ramal chirped, his voice sounding rather high-pitched, as he let his excitement get the better of him a bit. Blue Four on station, the voice of Misha, a large female ghost slitherer that had joined the clan and become a full-blown seeker, the same time as Ramal said. This is Blue Team Leader, we are launching, Zatam said, and the four green lights lit up above the hangar doors to indicate they were good to go. And as one, the four seekers hit the auto-launch controls, firing them from the protected atmosphere of the hangar and out into the unforgiving cold vacuum of space. The four Seeker craft were flying in tight formation as they joined onto the flanks by eight other craft, Ramal recognised as the Seeker shadows from both the Fury and the Vengeance, that sent their Seeker teams out to join them. This is Bronze Team, we're on your left wing, Blue Team. Leader, we'll follow you in, distinctly male human voice said. Roger that, Bronze Team Leader, glad to have you along, Zatam replied. This is Red Team Leader, we're on your right, Blue One. Let's show these bastards what happens when you fuck with our beloved clan, a very excitable human female voice said with infectious enthusiasm from their right. Roger that, Red One. We're the spear tip, but the real pain is following us, Zatam said, and this confused Ramal. What do you mean, Blue One? Red One asked. Check your rearview, Karas. Check out who just showed up, and trust me, you think we're bad news for these fuckers? That's the real pain coming in there, she said, and they all looked into their rearview cameras, just in time to see an absolutely massive ship punch through the asteroid field like it was made of paper. It made the Clan Pride, Fury and the Vengeance look like they were children's toys. It was the Grand Matriarch's Fury, and the ship was aptly named because even from here Ramal could feel the fury of the clan leaders that it contained. We're being targeted, Ramal yelled into his comms as his sensors lit up like a Freedom Day tree, showing they were all being hit with radar and laser pulses. All right, people, let's show these porks why you can't stop the Seekers of Truth. Hit the burners and prepare for ultra-high-speed manoeuvres. Evasive on my mark. Mark! Zatam yelled and Ramal punched the button. The experimental plasma drives that the Seeker Shadows were equipped with ignited, sending the ships ripping forward at incredible speed. Threw every single one of them back into their seats. At this speed, no other creature would have had a chance of reacting to the changes in trajectory. But these were no ordinary creatures. These were Seekers. Dream Warriors, one and all. To Ramal, the world seemed to crawl slow to an absolute crawl as he has just as is controlled, ducking, diving and weaving around the targeting systems coming from the human cruiser as they shot past it. To their senses, it must have literally looked like a cloud of chaff bouncing around all over the place, as they were. That was until, as one, they pulled back and hit the atmosphere like darts, cutting through it. But by that time, it was already too late. But honestly, the cruiser didn't even attempt to fire a single shot at them. Now, if only the same was true of the ground defences. All Seekers prepared for stealth detachment, set your Seeker Shadow for tactical evasion, and then landing and bailout. Zatam yelled into the comms. Ramal's little hands were a blur on his controls before he hit his camouflage button and the bailout button at the same time. Just as he vanished from sight, Ramal felt the punch of the ejection system firing up and firing him up and out of the canopy, which slid black just long enough for him to clear it and put him in freefall before closing up and firing off at top speed, drawing the flak gun fire away from them. Ramal found himself flying through the air as his suit deployed its glide wings. Turns out he was first out because he noticed his fellow Seekers were now forming up on him on either side, a largely invisible arrow as they flew through the dusty air heading towards the ground far below them. Blue Three, you have point. Lock in the flight path and we'll follow you in, Zatam said. Roger that, path locked in. Everyone on me, Ramal said proudly as he brought up the green indicator on his HUD to follow. transmitting it to his followers, Seek, as suddenly a very familiar voice came through their comms. "This is Silver One. All Seekers, you have green light to commence your attack. We're on our way in. The human crew has pulled out and is leaving the system. Seems they have some brains after all, and they don't wish to test us. But don't get too complacent. It's bound to be heavy ground resistance there. Your weapon's free to engage with any means at your disposal. Lethal force is authorized. Both myself and Gold One will be there soon. Goddess bless your Hunt Seekers. Show these kidnapping porks what happens when you fuck with Clan Mason," the Grand Patriarch said. "Yes, Grand Patriarch," every single one of them echoed as one. Amal smiled to himself, as his little Raptorian heart was filled with pride. He even felt not only the eyes of the clan upon them, but the weight of their strength ringing in those words. These fuckers were not going to know what hit them. And as to prove the point, the sky all around them was filled with vapour trails as the mighty railguns of the cruisers in the sky above them took out the remaining air defence turrets, still firing at the Seeker shadows in one decisive strike. The hammer of Clan Mason was well and truly about to fall on these fuckers. Now that was chapter 39, ladies and gentlemen. But will Zeepa be able to survive the onslaught of the droids? Will she and Paul be able to get the Queen out? And will Clan reach them in time? Can only be one way to answer those questions and so many more. You're going to have to tune in next time. So until next time, this is Ghost Nobody signing off and saying, I'll see you all next time.